Hello, Columbus. Hello, Chattahoochee Valley. Hello to all my friends down near the Georgia-Florida line. I hope you guys are doing well. Today is November the 1st. Can you believe we are already in the month of November? It's almost time for those turkeys and that Thanksgiving dressing later on in the month. But I do want to say to you, please choose wisely about your plans for Thanksgiving with your family. We certainly want you to be careful. Our family has decided we're not going to meet up this year because we are seeing a rise in the number of COVID cases. And I usually have Thanksgiving with my wife's family, and they have three doctors in the family, and all three are like, you know, this is just not a good year. So it's going to hurt us not to see our family members, but we certainly want everyone to be safe. So we'll sacrifice one holiday, you know, to make sure that everyone is safe. Early voting has ended here in Georgia. So if you did not vote via early voting, if you have not mailed in your ballot, if you requested an absentee ballot, or if you have not returned that ballot to a drop box, please do not mail your absentee ballot at this point. It will most likely not make it in time to be counted. There are four locations to drop off that ballot. You can drop off one. You can drop it off at the Citizen Service Center right out front. There's a voting bin there where you can drop it off. There's also a voting bin for your ballots right there at the parking deck of the Citizen Service Center. If you come in through the backside by the natatorium, drive into the parking deck, and on your way out, you will see the bin sitting there right there in the median. You can put your ballot in, and you can keep moving. There's a drop-off bin right there at the Frank Chester Recreational Center, right off of Benning Road, right down the street from the new Walmart. And there's also one at the new Health Department on North Veterans. So wherever you are in the city, we have convenient locations for you to drop off that ballot if you still have it. If you did not request an absentee ballot and if you did not make it to early voting, Election Day is Tuesday, November the 3rd, 2020. Polls will be open at your voting precincts from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Please, 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 we need everyone to make sure that they get out and vote. Your voices need to be heard. This is part of our civic responsibility. And, you know, it's just, if you look at it historically, so many people have gone through so much for us to have this right to vote. So we please need to make sure that we vote. If we want to have a say-so on what's going on in our community, we have to make sure that we vote. I want to send my thoughts and prayers to my friend, Mr. Charlie Jones, down in Buena Vista, Marion County, him and his wife, Miss Wanda Jones. Charlie lost his mother last week. And so, Charlie, we're praying for you, my friend. Stay strong. You know, God is always good, regardless of what may happen. And everything is his will. So just trust him. And we're praying for your family. And I know you guys are going to be okay. I know you'll be just fine. So as we go into the month of November, I got an opportunity to reflect on the different shows that we have done in the past. And I was reflecting in a conversation with this gentleman that I met here in the city. And I see him quite often due to my profession and the buildings that I have to visit. And he and I got to talking, and he began to tell his story, his family story, about his son and how his son suffered with substance abuse. And I asked him, I said, are you willing to come on the radio and have that conversation with me? Because that's something I have not talked about. As a matter of fact, it's a taboo subject in many of our families because it's such a personal thing. You know, that's the type of thing that we try not to talk about publicly. But, you know, as we always do here on Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, we try to provide the community with beneficial information that will help you, that will help your families, information that will help our community. And so I am so honored that this gentleman agreed to come on and have this conversation with us. Mr. Keith Weeks, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am absolutely amazing, Mr. Weeks. I tell you, we're just glad to be safe, you know, especially after that storm that came through this past week, Hurricane Zeta. And, you know, that was on the heels of Hurricane Delta. And now there are other storms brewing down in the Caribbean. So, you know, we just got to make sure we keep our eyes on the tropics, because hurricane season, as we know it, as we have identified, is supposed to end at the end of November, going into early December. But if conditions are right, you just never know what will happen. So we're just glad to be safe, Mr. Weeks. And I want to thank you again, Mr. Weeks, for your willingness to come on and talk to us about your story and talk to us about your son. Now, Mr. Weeks, what's your son's name?
My son's name was Jonathan Weeks.
His name was Jonathan Weeks? Okay, and I know when you and I were talking, you instantly dive right into talking about the impacts that it had on you guys and some of the signs and things of that nature. Tell us about your son, Mr. Weeks.
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to share my family story about Jonathan's struggle with addiction. Jonathan was a wonderful young man. He was a bodybuilder. He was a great musician. He loved to laugh. He loved his family. He was very picky about eating the right things. When I say that he was a bodybuilder, he knew what every muscle in the body would do. And quite frankly, I jokingly say that he never met a mirror he didn't like, because if he ever stepped in front of a mirror, he was going to flex something because he had such a nice physique.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, even though he ate the right things, he did the right things in the gym, addiction was so powerful that it overtook all of that and cost him his life.
Wow. 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 At what point did you discover that your son Jonathan had an addiction problem?
We started noticing changes in his behavior, changes in his appearance. It was probably around 2008. He became withdrawn. He had moved out, had purchased a home, was not coming around. He was losing weight. His appearance changed. He was having money trouble, and we just started seeing a spiral that at first we just couldn't understand. And quite frankly, looking back on that time, that we just wanted to deny the obvious, that no, this is not happening to us.
Mm-hmm. 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 Wow. Did he ever come and talk with anyone about it?
No. Like a lot of addicts, he was always denying the fact that he was using drugs. He was addicted to prescription drugs, and he would deny the fact that he was using them. You know, even in spite of the obvious, he would say, no, you know, we're wrong. And, you know, it wasn't until he had a situation where he had a run-in with the law, and I guess you want to call it, it was his very first rock bottom, that we were finally able to get him to admit back in 2009, it had gone on for a little over a year at that point, that he was struggling with substance abuse. And at that particular time, it was prescription drugs.
Wow. As a parent, when you look back on it, because this impacted you too, I can't imagine. Did you go through a period of faulting yourself for not recognizing this at an earlier pace?
We certainly did. Both my wife and I, we questioned our ability as a parent. How could this happen to us? What did we do wrong? How did we not see this? How did this happen to us? And, you know, we asked the question, why? And unfortunately, there are no answers to those questions. It wasn't until after his death and speaking with a physician that was treating Jonathan that he explained to us, addiction is a sickness. It's like diabetes. It's like any other disease. You can't cure it, but you can treat it, and you can live with it. And we never understood that. And the sad thing is, Teddy, I wish I would have known as much about addiction when Jonathan was struggling as I do now, because after his death, unfortunately, I really educated myself on the addiction, And I feel so guilty now that I could have used maybe some of these principles that I've learned since his death, and it could have made a difference, and he may be with us today had I known that.
Now, were the actual prescription drugs the actual cause of death?
Yeah, well, his actual cause of death was methadone toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
He had found a person that was providing him the illegal drugs, and he had changed from, he was doing the oxycodone and those types of things. And there toward the end, when he passed away, he had started using methadone pills.
Wow. You know, it must have been difficult, Mr. Weeks, that having raised this child, I mean, from the moment of infancy where he couldn't even feed himself or change himself, and, you know, doing the things that a father and son would do, you know, throwing balls and playing out in the yard and building things together and working on things around the house together. That void, how have you dealt with that void, Mr. Weeks?
Well, it's something that you never get over. I will tell you, I've had a 40-year career in public safety in some form, shape, or fashion. The majority of my career was spent in the private sector in corporate security, but there was a good part of my career that was spent. I was a firefighter, I was a police officer, and I worked for a defense contractor in hazardous materials. So I've seen some horrific things as a firefighter and as a police officer, but I was the one that found my son dead, and that is something that you never get over. A parent should never have to go through that. It is burned into my brain. It is etched into my brain. And I think it'll be etched into my memory forever. And so the reason that I do this and the reason that I talk to people, there are several reasons. First, I want to honor Jonathan's memory. I want to do something that Jonathan would be proud of that I'm doing. And I want to keep this from happening to others. And that's the most important thing. If my family's story can save someone else from going through what we are going through, that's what I want to do.
Wow. Well, Mr. Weeks, I tell you, you're certainly doing an amazing thing. This takes a lot of bravery. You know, it takes a very stable person to have public conversations about someone that they love so dearly and someone that they cared about so greatly. Your wife, Mr. Weeks, I'm sure you guys have had different journeys in learning to cope with this. How is your wife doing?
We struggle every day. Today, we're coming up on the 6th anniversary. He died November 5th, 2014. So we're coming up on the 6th anniversary of his death. And obviously, the end of October and the first week of November is very painful every year. My wife, Donna, is struggling in this in a much different way. You know, she handles the grief as a mother. I don't understand, you know, her grief. She doesn't understand mine. You know, she carried him for 9 months. She brought him into this world. She nurtured him. She carried him in his arms. I did the father things. We played ball together. We went fishing. We did those types of things. So our grief is very strong, it's very powerful, but it's also very different because of the mother-son relationship and the father-son relationship.
Right. Now, was Jonathan your only child?
No, we have two children. I have a daughter, Morgan Weeks, who's a University of Georgia graduate, and she's in sports journalism, and we're so proud of her success, and she's doing great in life.
How is Morgan doing?
Morgan struggles with the loss of her brother. They were 8 years apart in age, and so we kind of joked around the family that we had two first children because they were so far apart in age. But quite honestly, Jonathan thought Morgan hung the moon, and Morgan thought Jonathan hung the moon. They loved each other dearly. Jonathan was very protective of his little sister, and she was very impressed with her big brother. And I tell a quick story that, you know, Jonathan struggled a lot with his addiction during her college years, her early college years, but he was in a recovery program, and he was sober for a few months prior to his passing. And for the first time in her college days, he actually rode back in the fall to the University of Georgia. He rode back with Morgan as we were moving her back to the fall semester, and they got to spend that time from Columbus to Athens, and he explained to her about his addiction and his struggles and how he did not want to be addicted and how he did not like taking drugs and how, you know, he hated that he was putting the family through this. And he explained to her, you know, you just make one mistake and then you just keep taking drugs and you keep taking drugs and you spiral out of control, and the next thing you black out and you wake up and you go, oh my goodness, what have I done? And he had that conversation with her. But Morgan still struggles to this day with the loss of her brother.
Have you noticed a change in the way that your wife treat your daughter now, knowing that, you know, your son was right there too, and there were things that you just didn't see? Do you think that's impacted your relationship with your daughter?
It definitely has. We're overprotective. We jokingly have a phobia, and we call it phone phobia. If I call and she doesn't answer, we get upset. If she calls and we don't answer, she gets upset. If we call in a time that is out of the ordinary, like the middle of the day when she's working, her first thing is when she answers, oh my goodness, what's wrong? Is everything okay? So every time that phone rings, there's this phobia. Is she going to answer? Is she okay? Is she calling? Why is she calling? So we suffer from that. And it, jokingly, we say, the first greeting when you answer is, everything's okay, I just wanted to check on you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Mr. Weeks, for a parent that may be listening to you and are wondering, you know, what are some particular things that they may need to look for? Let's just say they have a hunch or something that one of their children is maybe behaving a little differently, or they may have thought that they saw something or something of that nature they should be concerned about. What can you say to the parents out there that they definitely should be looking for?
Well, I would look for changes in appearance, look for changes in behavior. If your child is a young adult or an adult, look for sudden money problems, unexplained accidents, vehicle mishaps, those types of things. If they've never existed before and then all of a sudden you start seeing these things, that's when you need to start asking questions. But keep in mind, the addict lives a very secretive life, and they are never going to tell you the truth until they're pinned in that corner and have to tell you the truth. So you have to, you know, really put on your investigative hat and peel back the layers and say, what's going on here? We've noticed these changes, and just really, really push to get the answers.
Is it possible to do that without being intrusive?
No, not in my opinion. You have to be intrusive. You have to be nosy. You have to walk up to that line of just breaking those privacy bonds to say, you know, this is what I need to know. Because at the end of the day, it's life or death. And if you don't get that person the help that they need, there's quite honestly only two outcomes. If you don't get the help you need when you're struggling with addiction, one outcome is jail. The other outcome is death.
Wow. And that's the reality of it, Mr. Weeks. I mean, I don't know if it can be said any differently. You are absolutely right. You know, Mr. Weeks, many of my listeners know that my daughter is 4 years old, and she's my first child, and I'm 40. I waited until I was 35 to have my first child, and I have never known love like I know it now, the love that I have for my daughter. I mean, I will stand in front of a barrage of bullets for my daughter.
Absolutely.
And I know you would do the same thing for your son, Mr. Weeks. That's why your bravery is just so amazing. And the fact that you will channel this in honor of Jonathan so that, you know, what he went through will not be in vain. Just maybe one or two people, or hopefully everyone who needs to hear this, hopefully God has put them in an earshot of this radio program so that they can hear your voice today and hear what you are sharing. as a grieving parent. You're still a grieving parent, Mr. Weeks. And we want you to know we're going to continue to pray for you and hope that you find the strength to continue to the work that you are doing. You volunteer a lot now in this arena. Tell us about that.
Well, after Jonathan's passing, he was in a treatment program, and we thought he was really making progress. He entered the treatment program in June of 2014, and July, August, and September were the best 3 months that we had with Jonathan in years. He was clean. He was sober. He had that smile back on his face. He was back in the gym. He was working out, and he was showing signs of maturity that we hadn't seen in years, and we really thought he was turning the corner. And unfortunately, in October, he relapsed. Early week of November, he relapsed. And unfortunately, the last relapse was the one that killed him. And one of the counselors told us at the treatment program is that, you know, when you relapse, one of two things could happen. You're one relapse away from dying, or you're one relapse away from long-term sobriety. And in Jonathan's case, that last relapse was death.
Wow. So, Mr. Weeks, I appreciate you for coming on, and we are getting close here to the end of our time together. Is there any message that you want to send, you know, for the next minute or so, you know, just talk to parents, talk to anyone who may be listening, who may be, you know, dealing with an addiction right now. Give them a plea on behalf of Jonathan.
Yes, I would say love your child unconditionally. Do everything within your power to help that child become sober. Understand that drug dealers are predators. Drug dealers prey on the weakness of the addict. Do everything you can do to get your child the help that they need. And one of the things, if I could, I use a scripture, Matthew 7:7, and this helps me, and this will also help the parent who is struggling, and this will also help the addict. And Matthew 7:7 says, keep on asking and it will be given you. Keep on seeking and you will find. Keep on knocking and the door will be open to you. That's what you have to do when you're in this battle, when you're in this struggle. You have to keep asking. You have to keep seeking, and you have to keep knocking, and you have to do that until that door to long-term sobriety is open.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, Mr. Weeks, thank you so much for joining us today, and please give our love and a big hug to Ms. Weeks from us here at Davis Broadcasting, and we appreciate you so much for coming on to tell your story so that we could have a realistic conversation about substance abuse and addiction, because it is a real problem in our community. You know, we're seeing it in all four corners of the United States. This is not something that just reigns supreme in a particular area. It's happening all over. And as you have said today, you know, people that find themselves struggling with addiction, they do a good job at hiding it, and they don't want to talk about it. So you have to push the envelope just a little bit. You have to make sure that you get that information, because your stubbornness in finding out what is going on with your child or your spouse or your parents or your friend or your frat brothers or your sorors, whoever it may be, your stubbornness in getting that information could be the act that saved their lives. And as Mr. Weeks shared with us today, he did what fathers would do. They did what parents would do. They loved their child. And had they known about this situation, if they would have had the slightest inkling, you know, that things were happening the way they were happening, I have no doubt, Mr. Weeks, that you guys would intervene at any level necessary.
That's correct.
So, Mr. Weeks, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share before we terminate our conversation?
Again, thank you for this opportunity. I want the parents out there, the families out there, to know they're not in this fight alone. There's help out there for you. You know, I'll give you my contact information offline, and I will make myself available to anyone. If they just need a shoulder to lean on or someone to talk to, if they're struggling with this, I don't want them to feel like they're out there by themselves. I want them to know there's someone out there that cares.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Mr. Weeks, what I'll do is I'll just say to anyone listening, if you would like to contact Mr. Weeks, just call us up here at Davis Broadcasting. I will make sure that the administration here has his contact so that they can share that with whoever may call and say that I want to talk to the nice gentleman who came on and told his story about his son that he loved dearly, but he lost to addiction. Thank you again, Mr. Weeks, and God bless you, okay?
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
Yes, sir. We just wrapped up a conversation there with Mr. Keith Weeks, and he talked so passionately about his son, Jonathan, who suffered from addiction and substance abuse. I wanted to have this conversation this Sunday because I know as the pandemic has been progressing and as numbers are beginning to increase again, we are finding ourselves in positions where many of us are reaching fatigue. We are at this COVID fatigue, but we can't give up. We can't stop now. You got to continue to wear the mask. You got to continue to wash your hands and use the hand sanitizer. You got to continue the social distancing. But at the same time, we also know during this period, we've seen an increase in domestic violence. And I can certainly imagine that we're seeing an increase in usage of those that have addiction problems. So if you're listening in the sound of my ears and you know that this conversation applies to you today, I beg you to please call up here to Davis Broadcasting. We will help you get the help that you need. Addiction doesn't have to have you. You can kick its butt. I promise you, you can. But it must start with you. As you heard Mr. Weeks say, his son Jonathan was the perfect model person. Had the best body. Very healthy. Even watched certain foods that he put into his body. But a pill became his downfall. Sometimes it's just that simple. Sometimes it's just that small. Just like COVID-19, something that we can't even see. You don't even know if it's in your presence. But look at the harm that is doing. And we have the ability to fight both of them. So as we begin to work as a community, as the Chattahoochee Valley, as my friends down near the Florida, Georgia line, all my folks out near Montezuma and Ellaville and Talbotton and Butler and Reynolds, down in Lumpkin, Georgia, my folks down near Fort Gaines, my folks down near Randolph Clay, Cuthbert, as you're listening to this, as we're preparing for this next wave of COVID-19, I want you to think about that. Look out for your family members that may be that are being abused and are afraid to say something. If you see heavy makeup or folks wearing shades and things of that nature inside buildings and trying to hide their face, things of that nature, talk to them. If you see behavior changes like what Mr. Weeks just spoke about with his son, Jonathan. If you start to see gross money mismanagement, accident in cars and things of that nature, talk to them. Because as Mr. Weeks just shared with us, once our loved ones are gone, we don't have the opportunity to bring them back. We don't have that opportunity. Life is fragile. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Thank you so much for listening. May God bless each of you. And I will see you next Sunday. Take care.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.